WKAR's Studio S at Michigan State University, this is Current Sports.
What is up, the beautiful people? You are now tuned into Current Sports right here on WKAR AM 870. I am your host, Al Martin. We've got a great show in store for you all as we recap what took place at Spartan Stadium yesterday afternoon as the Michigan State football team opened up Media Day, sort of like the unofficial start to the college football season, at least for us media members. So you get to hear from the players and a few of the assistant coaches on their thoughts as the season is now less than a month away. Can you believe that? You don't want to miss any of that chat. We'll also talk about new developments in the Michigan State University softball investigation, folks. And Ronda Rousey takes another jab at Floyd Mayweather Jr. And Rory McIlroy will make his return to the golf world later on this week. All of that and so much more. You know how you can weigh into the discussion that we have here on the show each and every weekday at 1 o'clock on WKAR AM 870. And that's by picking up that phone and dialing 517-355-9527. You can also go to our Facebook page at facebook.com/currentsports or even tweet me at Al Martin WKAR. Well, I'll tell you what, folks, so much to get to, so little time. So let's start this party like we always do. Here are your Current Sports quick hit headliners for this Tuesday, August 11th. An investigation into Michigan State softball program has exonerated head coach Jackie Joseph and assistant coach, Jessica Beach Bogracus, of allegations that they intentionally hit a player during batting practice. Now, the university issued a statement on Tuesday morning about the 95-page report, which was completed by the law firm Miller Canfield. Joseph has coached the Spartans since 1994. She is 6-0-7 and 6-27-1. In her 22 seasons. Jim Bibbs, the first African-American coach at Michigan State University, will be inducted into the United States Track and Field and Cross Country Coaches Association Coaches Hall of Fame. The 86-year-old Bibbs was one of six named to the Hall's 2015 class on Monday. The class will be formally inducted on December 15th in San Antonio, Texas. Bibbs stayed involved in track and field after retiring from Michigan State in 1995, working as a volunteer assistant at East Lansing High School into the last few years. The first major decision in Ohio State's heated quarterback competition was made by flipping a coin. Calling heads in Ohio State's meeting room, Cardale Jones won the flip and the honor of leading the first-string offense for the reigning national champions during the first drill of training camp Monday afternoon. But, just like the coin toss, the QB race remains a 50-50 proposition, with plenty of practices ahead of Jones and JT Barrett, and no rush for the program to declare a winner just yet. Johnny Cueto pitched a shutout in his Royals' home debut against the Detroit Tigers, topping the Tigers 4-0. Left-hander Matt Boyd started for the Tigers and gave up 9 hits and 3 runs through 5 1/3 innings of work. He struck out 6. Anibal Sanchez starts today at 8:10 p.m., looking to earn his first win since July 22nd and avenge a no decision against Kansas City in his last start. Sanchez left in the 7th inning with a 6-4 lead before the Royals rallied off Detroit's bullpen. On Monday night, when women's UFC fighter Ronda Rousey was asked by a fan in an Ask Me Anything chat on Reddit whether she could take Floyd Mayweather Jr. in a no-holds-barred bout, Rowdy did not pull any punches. Quote, "Floyd is one of the best boxers of all time. He would definitely beat me in a boxing match. I, unfortunately, don't get into matches. I fight for a living. In a no-rules fight, I believe I can beat anyone on the planet. Boxing is a sweet science with strict rules that I respect very much and aspire every day to improve at. But you said rule is fight, and that's my honest answer. Millionaire Donald Sterling. That's right. Donald Sterling sued celebrity website TMZ and ex-girlfriend over the recording of his derogatory remarks that cost him ownership of the Los Angeles Clippers basketball franchise. Now, Sterling's lawsuit filed Friday in Los Angeles Superior Court accuses TMZ and V. Stiviano of violating his privacy and causing damage on a scale of unparalleled and unprecedented magnitude. Wow. All right. Kevin Durant and Carmelo Anthony are scheduled to make their first substantive on-court comeback steps at today's opening day of USA basketball workouts. Now, Durant said yesterday night that he intends to join in this week's Team USA workouts. Durant and Anthony are among the stars who were initially earmarked to report to the three-day minicamp solely to satisfy USAB's mandatory attendance requirement in Vegas to remain eligible for the 2016 Olympic team. Neither Anthony nor Durant, sources said, will play in Thursday night's intra-squad game at the Thomas and Mack Center. That will be held 10:30 p.m. this Thursday on ESPN2. And Rory McIlroy has confirmed he is fit and ready to return to action at the U.S. PGA Championship on Thursday. McIlroy, out of action since he ruptured an ankle ligament while playing football with friends on July 4th, he has been grouped with Jack Johnson and the Masters and U.S. Open champion Jordan Spieth for the first two rounds of the championship, which will be the year's final major. Well, those are your current sports quick hit headliners. Call in right now and share your thoughts. 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. Without further ado, it's about that time to start the show. Welcome to the show, folks. You are listening to Current Sports right here on WKAR AM 870. My name is Al Martin. I am your host. Always have been. We got a lot to get to on today's show. Exciting day. Of course, we were at Spartan Stadium right after we got off the air during yesterday's show. And we headed over to Spartan Stadium to participate in, of course, Michigan State Football Media Day. Head coach Mark D'Antonio, he kicked off things by addressing us media members and giving his thoughts on the squad, as we are now less than a month away from the start of Michigan State football. Of course, they open up the year on September 4th on the road at Western Michigan University in Kalamazoo, KZU. That should be a very entertaining game. I don't think... You know, you can't sleep on Western's football squad. They have a pretty impressive squad coming into this season, so that should be pretty entertaining stuff, and I'm sure that Kalamazoo is going to be rocking during that night game. It'll be a 7 p.m. game, so that's going to be, the atmosphere is going to be absolutely off the charts. And then they, of course, return home and will take on Oregon. Wow, tough way to start the year, right? At Spartan Stadium, and that kicks off a four-game homestand. So it was a great time at Spartan Stadium, picking the brains of players like Shalik Calhoun, Damon Knox, Riley Bulla. We even talked with, you know, coordinators like Dave Warner and Mike Tressel. It was fantastic, you know, getting the chance to really just sit down at a table with these individuals and pick their brains on their thoughts, expectations, and hopes leading into this upcoming season. So you do not want to touch that dial, because you will get a chance to hear from those individuals as we will be bringing you our coverage from Spartan Stadium's media day yesterday. You do not want to miss that. I even actually filed a report, a video report on yesterday's media day that you can actually watch right now if you want by going to WKAR.org. Again, that's WKAR.org. Very interesting things. And it actually, you know, each and every Tuesday, we bring you guys Top 5 Tuesday. And today we decided to, of course, center it around Michigan State football and bring to you guys our top five takeaways from Michigan State Media Day. So you don't want to miss that. Also, later on in the hour, new developments in the Tom Brady deflate gate scandal. Yeah, we can't get away from this story. Tom Brady, actually the judge who will be hearing the case, in court, is actually urging a last-minute settlement between Brady and the NFL. So we'll talk about those implications in that case. And also, Rory McIlroy is returning to the golf world. Wow, I'm excited about that, folks. Again, we haven't seen Rory due to that ankle injury that, it happened to take place during the July 4th weekend, playing soccer with friends. And, doing some pretty harsh damage to that ankle of his. But now he will be returning and will be playing with. I mean, when I looked at my phone and saw the pairing, I just instantly got excited. I mean, you talk about Rory McIlroy, Zach Johnson, and Jordan Spieth. Come on, man. Oh, I'm going to be glued to my TV at least, for Thursday and Friday, because that's the first two rounds that they're paired up with. And those three are fantastic golfers. They are having, remarkable years. Well, Rory, I mean, he sat out a lot of the year because of that ankle injury, but Zach Johnson is coming off a win. Of course, we all know about the hoopla surrounding Jordan Spieth's play on the links. So we'll talk about what Rory McIlroy, his return means to the world of golf. But I want to start off first by inviting the man behind the glass, our fantastic engineer of WKAR's Current Sports, Isaac Constance. How you doing, Isaac?
Oh, I'm doing well. First off, this is totally off topic, but, it's been over a month since the summer league ended, so I need to talk a little bit of basketball.
Get it off your chest.
Wait, sorry?
I say get it off your chest. What is it?
Yeah, exactly. Why is Carmelo Anthony still considered a star? The guy can't win more than 10 games with the Knicks. That's not true, but he can't win more than 20, and he doesn't play defense. He's not a league star.
Phil Jackson's comments that I'm assume is what you're talking about here, right?
I am, yeah.
Because I don't know if you guys heard, but Phil Jackson, who of course is the head man over in New York now with the Knicks, he stated that he believes that Carmelo Anthony can be the New York Knicks' Michael Jordan or Kobe Bryant offensively because of the triangle that they are running out there. And I agree. I think Carmelo is a tremendous offensive talent, Isaac. The man can score, with the best of them. He's an offensive juggernaut. But again, he doesn't play defense, and you need more than just a Carmelo Anthony if you are going to compete for NBA championship rings. And I just think that team has just been downtrodden for so long. I can only imagine what's going through Carmelo Anthony's head. I mean, he's still getting paid at the end of the day. But, for an athlete to have the type of competitive drive that Carmelo Anthony has, it has to be frustrating that he hasn't even sniffed an NBA championship throughout his career thus far. But I agree. I don't know what in the world Phil Jackson is thinking about. And I don't know. I like Phil better as a coach than a GM because some of the moves he's made have been just unbelievably, undeniably questionable throughout his tenure with the New York Knicks. So I'm glad you got that off your chest, though, Isaac. I'm glad you got anything else.
No. Now okay. I'm absolved of all qualms I have with the world. As of now, I might have a new one in 5 minutes. I'll let you know.
I'm telling you, as a sports fanatic and in our world, we're never satisfied, right? Especially when it comes to sports that we have a passion for, you know? So, all right, I want to start today's show with a discussion on the Michigan State softball team. Now, we have been bantering about this story for a while. We even had Matt Charbonneau of the Detroit News, one of the individuals who actually broke this story concerning Jackie Joseph, who is the head coach of the Michigan State softball program, and assistant coach Jessica Beach Bogracus. And, you know, they were actually accused by Alyssa McBride, who is now no longer with the team. She was a senior last year, and intentionally hitting Alyssa during a batting practice session. Now, you know, there was an investigation that the police actually, you know, went through and found that there was a lack of evidence that really proved that Jackie Joseph and Jessica Beach Bogracus had anything to do with intentionally hitting Alyssa McBride during a BP session. And there was a police investigation, and there was also an investigation that took place within the friendly confines of Michigan State University. And that investigation into Michigan State softball program has exonerated head coach Jackie Joseph and assistant Jessica Beach Bogracus of allegations that they intentionally hit Alyssa. Now, I'm reading this directly from the Lansing State Journal. Our good friend Chris Solari typed up this article. Here's a direct quote from Jackie Joseph in a statement released to the Lansing State Journal. Quote, "As unpleasant as it was to have my actions and motivations put under a microscope by police, prosecutors, and internal investigators, I am pleased to know that it's over and Michigan State University's internal investigation completely vindicates me with respect to all allegations. I expected nothing less. I sincerely appreciate the witnesses who gave truthful statements about the events in question." And then she goes on to say more, but I won't, bring up more of the quotes here. But that really, in a nutshell, you can kind of get the feel that Jackie Joseph is happy that, you know, that this thing is panned out now and that she can get back to business and get back to concentrating on her job as the head coach of the Michigan State softball program. My question now, when looking at this entire story, Isaac, is, first off, I'm glad that what was, you know, alleged to have happened by, of course, the mouth of Alyssa McBride is found to have not happened, at least when looking at the facts here. There was a lack of evidence in both reports to charge and to say that Jackie Joseph and Jessica Beach Bogracus were involved in some sort of wrongdoing here. I'm glad, because I've interviewed Jackie. I've covered her ever since, I've become a reporter in this area. I remember when Jessica Beach Bogracus, she was inducted into the Greater Lansing Area Sports Hall of Fame last year. I had a chance to talk to her. She seems like a wonderful individual. And when this story first broke, it kind of took you aback, because you had to think about both sides here. What if this is true? It just gave you a bad taste in your mouth. So at the end of the day, I'm glad that the truth came out and that these two individuals were, again, exonerated. That's the word used in the report, were exonerated of all wrongdoing here, because that is good for the program and it's good for Michigan State University. And next, the big question I want to bring to the table now, Isaac, to start this discussion, is what will this story, even though it came out that, you know, Jessica and Coach, Joseph were found to have no wrongdoing in this whole thing. Even with this story, though, this is still bad press at the end of the day. What will this story do, perception-wise, for the program, especially when it comes to the world of recruiting? What do you think?
Well, I think whenever a story like this breaks, first off, it's always, and this is unfortunate, but this is the news the world we live in. Bad news stays in the news longer than good news. So I think word of this will get around much less than the initial break that, you know, possibly the MSU softball coaches and staff were throwing balls at their players. That's more of an eye catcher than that they are pardoned and they didn't do anything, or at least weren't proven to have done anything. Now, so I think that definitely tarnishes their reputation and the team's reputation. However,
you think it tarnishes it? I don't know if I would use the word tarnish. I would say they were certainly, it certainly. Takes a, you know, it puts a dent in the armor, at least, because anytime you have negative press, any program for that matter, it is going to hurt the reputation of the program. But the fact that, you know, that Jackie Joseph and Jessica Beach Bogracus were found to have no wrongdoing when two investigations took place. I don't know if it would tarnish their legacy because they were found to have no wrongdoing in this whole thing.
Well, yeah, I don't think, I guess to rephrase, I think it might tarnish the perception of the team, but no, their actual legacy, their dignity, everything like that should remain intact since, like you said, two investigations, they weren't proven to have done anything wrong. However, an interesting article that I read on the Detroit News point out the fact that Gerald J. Gleason II of Miller Canfield, who conducted one of the investigations, did not interview any key witnesses. That seems like a bad investigation to me. I'm not saying they did it. That's just a little bit shady.
That is, you know, and I did read that as well. I mean, and if you know, again, if he didn't interview some of the key components that accused Jackie and Jessica of what they were being accused of, then yeah, that may be a hole that you can harp on. But again, the investigation is complete. Michigan State, you know, they have seemed to, you know, to dot their I's and cross their T's in their regard. And hey, they're not guilty. They found that they are not guilty. And even in the police report, in the police report at least, they interviewed those key witnesses and talked to those key individuals. And hey, they found no grounds to accuse, you know, Jessica and Jackie of any wrongdoing. So, but again, as far as the perception of the program goes, though, I mean, hey, if I'm a player in high school, if I'm a softball player looking to take my talent somewhere, and Michigan State is recruiting me, and knowing that a story like this took place, where a player within the program had problems with two members of the coaching staff, yeah, I can see how that individual, how if I'm a player, I would certainly question or you know, second guess myself to say, okay, all right, well, let me really look into if I want to really go here. Because there's a lot of drama surrounded around the program with this negative press surrounded, you know, in this story. So for me, if I am a player, yeah, you better believe that I may take a you know, do a double take before officially committing to the Spartan program. Because, you know, having negative press like this does do something from a perception standpoint across the board. When I could possibly go to another university that doesn't have this drama surrounded around it and, you know, could play worry-free, if you will. So, I could see how a potential student-athlete who may, you know, who's weighing the option of where to play next season or whatever, you know, status that individual may be in high school in the next 2 years, who knows. I can see how they may have to, you know, squint their eyes a bit when looking at the program and say, all right, well, do I want to go here or do I want to go somewhere else? I can see that.
Al, and the other thing that I think it does is at the very least, it does suggest, and not just suggest, it proves that there is a little bit of a gap between the coaches and the players because it's not in these cohesive locker rooms that all love each other. That player does accuse a coach of this. Whether, you know, alleged or whether it's proven, whether the coach is innocent, anything. But that is an attempt, no matter what the case, for one to kind of get retribution or even attack the other. So, no, I think this does suggest that there is some conflict in the locker room.
Yeah, because that's the main thing. I mean, if you are, you know, debating on, you know, being a member, a player of the Michigan State softball program, the number one thing that you want to consider is, of course, the relationship that you are going to have with the head coaches. That is going to be big. So, I'm just glad, though, that, hey, Jackie Joseph can move on now. And I tell you what, though, there's going to be a big spotlight on this program now. Of course, Jackie Joseph, you know, entering. I mean, she's been a longtime head coach for this program since 1994. Her record is 607 and 627-1, actually. And with a record like that and with a story like this, it's going to put a spotlight on the program. And you got to win at the end of the day. Right now, her record overall, Isaac, is below 500. So with this story, there's going to be some eyeballs on you. And the best way to hush up those who are criticizing the program and for those who may have negative perception about the Michigan State softball program now is by going out there and winning. Winning silences all of that. So, hey, Jackie Joseph, she's been the head coach for 22 seasons with this program. And this upcoming year, she is going to have arguably the most pressure she has ever had in her entire tenure, I believe. Let's go to our phone lines right now. We've got Mike from Saginaw on line one. Mike, how you doing?
Hey, how you doing, Elmire? Not, no, my phone cut off yesterday. I was just telling Isaac about the Illinois women basketball situation where they had the coach up there stereotyping the players. I'd like to have your take on it.
I didn't hear about that story. Did you hear about that story, Isaac?
Not yet.
I haven't heard of anything about that story.
It was a situation where one of the players that played basketball up in Flint, she got suspended for the program. They turned around and said that Illinois coaches was being racist toward the basketball program. They was telling that some of the kids in Chicago that they was using racial terms to describe the black players and the white players and how their strengths and weaknesses are. I'm surprised y'all ain't heard nothing about that.
Oh, you're talking about Matt Boland. That's who you're talking about.
Yeah, that's who I'm talking about.
Yeah, okay. We did bring that story to our queue. We did have a brief discussion about that story here on the show. I mean, and that kind of, you know, is in relation to the discussion that we're having when it comes to, you know, player and coach relationship at the end of the day. And I agree. I mean, if the group of players felt as though, you know, they were being abused physically, you know, psychologically, mentally, by members of the coaching staff, then they should file that suit. I mean, that's certainly justified. I mean, we've seen head coaches that might just go too far. First off, there's a lot of pressure when it comes to especially, you know, college athletics, Division I college athletics, because at the end of the day, those coaches are coaching for their jobs. They have to win basketball games, football games, whatever sport you're talking about. And if they don't, they're going to be let go. So some coaches go to extreme lengths that cross certain boundaries and lines. And if you remember Mike Rice, that's the glaring example that I always bring up at Rutgers. I mean, Mike Rice was a guy, you know, who came in and we saw him on video physically touching players and throwing chairs at them. That is going way too far in order to get the job done. There's other ways you can do it. So, I side with the players in that story, Mike.
You was talking also the last, not this call before, I was talking about the CDs and the music thing. You was talking about North Carolina situation where they have academic fraud and all of that going on. I mean, college sports is so big now that it became so much of it's a job. Supposedly, it's supposed to be teaching you values and education, but it's becoming a job, and it's just like work to these people they bring in and everything. Dude, it seems like they overstressed, and the coaches are stressing because they have to justify their salaries. The players have to justify being there on scholarship. What is going on? Is it just fun or is it just too much work? What's your take on it?
Mike, this is the world of Division I college athletics. We've constantly had the debate about whether or not college athletes should be paid because their schedules are tremendously strenuous. It's like they're working a full-time job when you consider, you know, trying to balance the academic standpoint of being a student athlete with, of course, practicing just about every single day to be good at their sport and to perform to the best of their ability out on the field or the hardwood. For me, yes, there is a certain amount of stress that comes with being a student athlete. Now, I'm speaking from the outside looking in because, again, I wasn't a student athlete when I went to Michigan State University, but I know those that were. We even had interns here at Current Sports, you know, who played on the football team, and they would talk to me about their schedule, how they have practices and weightlifting at, you know, 6 a.m., and trying to juggle that with academics is certainly a tall order. But there's the flip side to that you can point to other student athletes who are getting the job done both academically and on the field or the hardwood, again, whatever sport they play. And you look at those individuals and say, okay, what are they doing that this individual isn't doing? So at the end of the day, I feel as though there's no excuses. You know, that you can certainly find a balance within it, but it is tough. It is tough. And I can only imagine because I was never a student athlete when I went to Michigan State University. But I do believe that these, you know, especially when you talk about, you know, some of the big, you know, positions in college football, like, you know, okay, like the quarterback position for Michigan State, you know, sure. I can only imagine what Connor Cook's schedule is like. Added mm-hmm. with the pressure of being the starting quarterback on a pretty dominant college football program like Michigan State. That comes with a certain amount of stress, and it takes a special individual to deal with that, Mike.
Okay, here's something fun before I let you go and get the rest of your show. I know you heard of She Got Game. I'm talking about the rapper game.
On VH1.
I
came across that. I did. And, you know, for those that don't know what Mike is talking about, there's a hip hop artist by name The Game. And, that you know, reality TV, man, is just so crazy sometimes. He actually has a reality television show where he's trying to find his wife or fiance. And there's like, you know, what, like 10 or 12 women vying for his love. I did see that ridiculousness on my television last night, Mike.
It's like The Bachelor, but it's a rapper instead, man. Yeah. I said, man, yeah. I'm laughing at that because Spike Lee movies been running on BET all the time. He Got Game.
Right.
It's been running constantly on BET. And I just thought some of those scenes in that movie, Spike Lee movie, it is so true, man. You know about him being recruited. They try to recruit him to go to the big university and stuff, and how everybody is trying to get there, trying to protect their ground and everything, man. But, you know, the reality TV, man, I just, I don't know, man.
I hear you, Mike. I hear you, man. It will not be on my DVR. I tell you that, without a doubt. Mike, thanks a lot for your call,
Thank
man.
Thank you a lot, Al Martin. You have a good one,
man. All right. I have seen that. You know, a lot of people don't know this about me, though, Isaac. I don't want to let this guy out the bag, but, hey, Mike brought it up, so, hey, why not? I am, you know, one of my hidden pleasures is watching reality TV. I didn't want to let that out, but I'm going to let it out. I watch.
That's not a hidden pleasure. That's a dirty secret, Al.
Is that a dirty secret, man? I watch I watch Love and Hip Hop every single week, man.
Oh.
Mondays at 8 o'clock. Yep. Can you believe that, dude? Yeah.
No.
All right. Let's hit our first break. I don't know where this show just went just now. Let's hit our first break. When we come back, we will talk all things Michigan State football. As Isaac and I were in the house at Spartan Stadium yesterday afternoon to chat with the players, a few of the coaches, about the upcoming Spartan football season. You don't want to miss that. You are listening to Current Sports right here on WKAR AM 870. Media Day kicked off here at Spartan Stadium, marking the unofficial start to the college football year, at least for us media members. Now, the national talk surrounding the Big Ten is that the Big Ten is back. Ohio State winning a national championship last year, the hire of Jim Harbaugh at U of M, and, of course, the unheralded success of the Michigan State football team in recent years. But for the Spartans, they believe that the Big Ten never really went anywhere.
Growing up, I always thought the Big Ten was a big deal. So, you know, to play in the Big Ten is a big deal. Period. So, as far as it being back, I didn't know it wasn't here.
Intercepted by Eli Apple at the 25, and Apple will go to the ground at the 32, and that's it. Ohio State national champions for the eighth time.
The Big Ten's done what they've traditionally done. Just smash mouth football, and they're going to come at you and. It's been that way, and all the teams are continuing on the tradition. So.
I don't believe that the Big Ten went anywhere to begin with. I believe that we were always here, but the recognition that we solely deserved, we didn't get. And I think that because of last year, because of the success that the Big Ten has had the last couple years, now it's more so saying, you know, the Big Ten, oh, man, they're back. But it's like we've always been playing this way. We've always had people who can compete and be national contenders also.
Darren, can you elaborate on that model, reach higher, and how that came about?
It just means that there's always a higher plateau that we can get to. You know, last year we obviously had a good season. finishing 11-2, winning the Cotton Bowl, but we feel like we left some things on the table. And we know that we can't get complacent. We always got to have, you know, understand that mantra, which is reach higher this year, and understand that there's higher places for us to go.
Joe, how prevalent is national championship talk, if at all?
Man, it's huge, man. We really want it. We have that desire for it, and we hear it all the time between coaches and just one another. You know, this is something that we're now striving for. It once was not a goal, but now it's something that we really definitely want.
All right, there you have it, folks. That was actually my report from Michigan State Football Media Day at Spartan Stadium yesterday afternoon. Again, if you want to catch the visual of that report, just simply go to WKAR.org. And again, folks, you know, since it was Media Day, we are going to bring you guys, you know, since we got to chat with and a lot of, you know, when putting together packages like that, there's a lot of things that you guys, you know, don't get to hear. You know, there's, you know, it's kind of like a media scrum. You just sit down, stick the mic in front of a player or coach's face, and they just get questions about every single topic you can imagine heading into the season. So there were so many things addressed, so much that we're actually going to dedicate our Top 5 Tuesday to Michigan State Football Media Day and bring to you our top 5 takeaways from that very event. Here we go. All right, time for Top 5 Tuesday. Top 5 takeaways from Michigan State Football Media Day. And, you know, there were so many areas that I could really harp on when really just, you know, sitting back and taking in everything that was said during yesterday's Media Day session. Again, that was kicked off first off by, you know, head coach Mark D'Antonio. Then they brought out the defense. We got to hear from guys like, you know, Damon Knox and Shalik Calhoun and Riley Bulla, you know, voices that you just heard throughout that piece coming out of our first break. And, you know, then there was a 45-minute break, and then they brought in the offensive players. You know, we talked to Connor Cook, you know, also just Dave Warner, Michigan State offensive coordinator. So many areas to look at. Now, first off, for me, Isaac, I think one of the big talks, especially when talking about the practices leading up to the start of the year, is who is going to be the guy or guys, looking at the backfield for Michigan State at the running back position. Of course, Jeremy Langford, you know, he ran for, you know, what, 1,500 yards last year, 22 scores. He is going to be an individual that is going to be very hard to replace. Jeremy Langford was fantastic last year. Delton Williams, again, for me, was the natural guy to look at and say, okay, he's going to be the guy next year. But then, of course, we saw that, you know, the off-the-field incident that took place, the suspension in March after an arrest for flashing a gun. He's reinstated now and returning to the program as a non-scholarship athlete. But there are a few names that really could give Delton a run for his money. Guys like Gerald Holmes, guys like Madre London, LJ Scott. Those individuals, that position battle is the most intriguing in my eyes. And that's really one of the big takeaways for me. We actually got a chance to talk with, Dave Warner, who is the running back coach, for Michigan State. And, here's what he had to say about that battle.
Dave, I don't know if you addressed this yet, but what's that battle been like with the running back so far?
It's, you know, day three. So, it's just been, just been moving along, one day of shoulder pads on, so nothing's really happened yet. I mean, really what it's going to come down to is scrimmage situations. We'll have some live situations prior to a scrimmage, but it's going to come down to live reps more than anything. And not that the other practices or the other carries don't mean anything. Every carry means something, but, you know, we like to see what guys can do when the bullets are flying.
In close battles like that, I know a lot of it comes down to the little things, the little details. What sort of details will you be evaluating when looking at who's going to be that guy in the backfield?
Well, I think there's a lot of them that you look at, but one's going to be consistency. Is you know, how often are they doing all those little things, the footwork. The little things lead to big things, you know, the footwork. There's so many things that can lead to big plays in the run game, taking care of your responsibility in the pass game. I mean, it all comes to a head when you get in a scrimmage situation. So we're going to see how they handle it.
Competition like this can breed the best out of all these individuals, right?
That's what we hope. They don't like competition, they're in the wrong business, because we've been saying since day one of spring practice, and I say it in front of the whole offense, we're waiting to find out who the guy is. And everybody knows it, so all eyes are on it. Not just at that position, there's other positions, but certainly someone's got to be the guy to sort of take that thing over.
Dave Warner, running backs coach for Michigan State's football team. And Dave just said it best. I mean, again, we're talking about day four here now for the Michigan State football team. You know, when evaluating who's going to be that guy, who's going to be that running back to get those carries and to be the workhorse in a Michigan State football program that historically, especially in a D'Antonio coach program, that historically relies on the run a lot. You know, they do a great job. What I say about Michigan State's football program is you're going to get a lot of running, a lot of smash mouth football, mixed in with some great quarterback play and chances down the field from Connor Cook, who is a Heisman Trophy candidate. So whoever that guy is going to be, he is going to have to hold it down, because just look at the recent years here. I mean, Jeremy Langford running for 1,500 yards. And then before him, Le'Veon Bell, who is now ripping it up in the NFL for the Pittsburgh Steelers. Michigan State has a really rich history when it comes to their running back. And you better believe that Dave Warner, Coach D, and the rest of that coaching staff is going to be looking at who is going to be that guy with a very fine-tooth comb. Delvin Williams, Madre London, Gerald Holmes, and LJ Scott, who I've heard is a man. I mean, he's coming in, you know, with the body of a guy who can already play right now. So we don't know. We haven't seen them play. We haven't seen them take any reps in practice yet, Isaac. So I don't know who has that advantage. If anything, the only thing we can really evaluate here is looking at experience. We know Delvin Williams played last year. We know, of course, you know, a guy like, you know, Gerald Holmes, who had 15 rushes, 44 yards. We've seen him play. So those two guys have that experience of playing in a game. But how far would that go? Who knows? Maybe LJ Scott and Gerald Holmes, looking at those guys, Madre London, maybe they are so talented that you can't ignore them and you got to throw them in there. We just don't know. But that battle is going to be one of the key components to look at throughout practice.
That was my number three. But I'm just so to save a little time and to expedite things, I'm going to move that up back to five. So I'll go straight to my number four. And that's that MSU is not one of these historic storied programs like your Michigan or Ohio State just yet. And that's a bold claim. But the thing is, for MSU, this is not a championship or bust season. Despite finishing in the top five the past 2 years and everything like that, you heard players like, or coaches, and you heard D'Antonio, and you heard the players talk about this too, that these past few years have been a success, and that this year a championship might be the goal, but there are plenty of other success steps along the way. So for me, MSU still has a little ways to go as a program, and that's something they can prove on, and they're well on their way to doing so. But it's not a championship or bust for MSU, which I was one of my takeaways.
I kind of disagree with you on that from a standpoint as, you know, and this goes right into my number four point. For me, you know, this new motto of reach higher. When you for the past 2 years have, you know, finished in the top five of the college football world, you look at that next mountain to climb. And that's naturally with any franchise. You look for that next challenge. They have won a Rose Bowl. They have, you know, won in the Cotton Bowl. They finished top five these past 2 years. Naturally, the next expectation and goal for this program, I believe, is to, as again, as their motto states, reach higher and play in the college football playoff. That's the goal. And, you know, that's what I want to, that's another point I want to make that goes right into my number four here. This program, something that really stood out to me is when I talk to those different players, you know, guys like Joel Heath and Damon Knox, even Darian Harris, they were not shy in letting it be known that they want to compete for a national championship. Joel Heath came out and said to me right to my face that, yeah, it's talked about in the locker room. We talk about this a lot, and we believe that we can accomplish that goal. Even though you did hear from other players the cliche coach speak, I like to say, or coach or player speak, saying, we take it one day at a time, game by game, week to week. We'll win a Big Ten championship. We'll at least compete for one, and then we'll move on from there. But you did hear multiple players in that room say that they want to compete for a national championship, and I think that's a given. Anytime you finish top five, what's the next goal? All right, let's see if we can finish top four now and play in the college football playoff. They want to compete for a national championship, Isaac, and I think that's sort of the general consensus when it comes to many of the players that team.
Yeah, I take that as a given, like you said, because of course you want to compete for a national championship, but for me, I did not get the feeling that was a championship or bust season this year. Did you get that feeling? Because for me, I think MSU would be totally content making the playoff and building off that, which is fine.
Well, that's what I
would
mean.
Be content
if you make
that.
The playoff, you got to be a top four team because
yes.
There's only four teams in that playoff. So, yeah, they would be just fine if they make the playoff, if they make the college football playoff. If they end up finishing top five again, I mean, hey, they did it last year. So it's like, you know, you don't win or you don't lose here. You know what I mean? So but at the end of the day, this team has the talent, though, to compete for a national championship, and I think that is the goal.
They
goals
do
adjust, though, as Coach D likes to say all the time. As the season goes on, you have to reevaluate your goals sometimes. If you fall short of certain previous goals that were set before the year, you got to reevaluate and adjust, and that may happen this year as well. But right now, this team wants to play in that college football playoff badly.
They do, but I think. They're still one step away from really needing the championship. I think for programs like Alabama, for Ohio State right now, they need that national championship to validate all the talk going into it. Without a championship, the season's not a bust for them, but that's the only thing that matters to them at this point. Anything else is kind of what's expected. For MSU, it's not at that level just yet. I think that MSU can get to that level, but they're not there yet. Anyway, though, on to my number three. It's early. I mean, as you say, wipe the crust out of your eyes because so many of these position battles have yet to be decided, and it was the third day of practice yesterday, so MSU still has so much to decide and so much to do. It's a little bit early to make too many judgments on this team because, like you said, the running back position is totally up in there. So is the wide receiver position. We don't know if Burbridge is going to be the target or if it's going to be Troop or if it's going to be Josiah Price taking a Kobe Fleener role as he did at Stanford or somebody we've never even discussed on the show who will be Connor Cook's main target as Cook goes into his senior season. So that was one of my main takeaways. That was my number three.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to it. When talking about, you know, Cook's next big target, I really like senior wide receiver D'Anthony Arnett. It's being said that he had a fantastic spring, and he may be the guy to really step in and, maybe replace Tony Lippett. Also, again, as you mentioned, McGarry Kings Jr., look out for him. He had 404 reception yards with one touchdown. He is the leading returnee. And, again, wide receiver R.J. Shelton, he sits atop the depth chart at the flanker position. As well, and Aaron Burbridge. I mean, there's a few names you can bring up in that discussion as well. For me, my number three, I want to talk about briefly Narduzzi's absence. Of course, Michigan State, throughout Narduzzi's most of his tenure, I mean, he had that Michigan State defense as one of the best, and at one time the best in the entire nation. Looking at that Rose Bowl season, Michigan State was the number one ranked defense in the nation. And, you know, with now Narduzzi now taking the head coaching position out in Pittsburgh, there is still going to be a spotlight on that defense to see if they can, you know, continue their tradition that they have built, you know, these past few years. Of course, new co-defensive coordinators, Harlan Barnett and Mike Tressel, they have a tall order in front of them, but they have a lot of talent to work with. And here's what a few of the players had to say. Here's actually Riley Bulla and Damon Knox on the absence of Narduzzi and how that adjustment period has been.
It's been a little bit different. Without him screaming and yelling all the time, which we love, but you know, Coach Snyder coming in has done a great job. You know, him, Coach Barnett, Coach Tressel, Coach Burton, we love them. The great coaches. So, you know, looking into the season, you know, we're set at coaching-wise. You know, we're just excited.
You know, not much has changed at all. I think as far as you, the thing you miss is Coach Narduzzi's the excitement he brings sometimes. You know, I think it's sometimes a little bit more quiet just because you don't have him yelling. But as far as the coaching, you know, you still have great coaches. You're still learning, you know, just as much as you was, if not more, when he was here. You know, so not as far as the coaching standpoint and, you know, becoming a better player, you know, we're not lacking that. And, you know, so I think it's, you know, if anything, the coaches have stepped up a lot more just because they have to take on another role. And I think that the players have done the same thing.
And you know what? I really think that it's going to be a seamless absence. Again, you just heard from Damon Knox and Riley Buller there. But again, Harlan Barnett and Mike Tressel, they may not be, you know, the fiery, get-in-your-face type of a guy that Pat Narduzzi was. I mean, he was just such an emotional guy, and you just wanted to, you know, run through a wall when he was coaching. You know, as Damon just said, I mean, they're more quiet, kind of even keel. But at the same time, I mean, hey, they will get in you if you do miss an assignment or mess up. They're that type of a coach as well. And again, they have a lot of talent to work with. Again, you're looking at, you know, the deep front seven led by All-American defensive end Shalik Calhoun, disruptive defensive tackle in Lawrence Thomas, athletic offensive linebackers in Ed Davis and Darian Harris. And then you look at, you know, the passing defense. Again, Michigan State allowed, what, 227.3 passing yards per game last year. That was good for 60th in the nation, but did so on 6.7 yards per pass attempt, which was 37th in the FBS. The secondary will miss All-Americans like safety Curtis Drummond, Trey Wayans as well, cornerback now for the Minnesota Vikings, who I think is going to be a fantastic pro. But plenty of talent remains, such as, you know, free safety R.J. Williamson, hard-hitting, you know, safety Monte Nicholson, junior cornerbacks and Darian Hicks, who is battling mononucleosis right now. We'll see how far that sets him back. And also Demetrius Cox. This is going to be a very good defense, I do believe, Isaac. And, again, the talent and leadership that's on this squad is going to help in that regard as well.
Al, and that transitions perfectly into my number two, because my number two was that this defensive front seven, especially the defensive line, has the potential to be MSU's best ever. Because you look at this defensive front seven, five players are seniors, and then the players that aren't seniors are two of the best on the team in Malik McDowell and Riley Bull. So MSU stacked in the front seven, especially that defensive line, and you could hear the excitement that players had talking and discussing and previewing what that line can do. I heard one player, and I forgot who it is, but they said this might be the best line they've ever seen or ever played with. Darian Harris made similar remarks, so I'm really excited to see what this line in front seven can do.
And again, you know, going to number two for me, Connor Cook. Connor Cook, every time I see him, I've dubbed him with the nickname Cool Confident Cook, because he is always just the way you want a quarterback to be, just confident and, you know, who's willing to work his tail off. I remember that's one of the things that stood out to me. When we had, you know, Andre Sims Jr., who was a former wide receiver for the Michigan State football program who transferred, you know, down south to Georgia Southern. I remember Andre always telling me about how, you know, Connor would call the running backs, you know, at sometimes like 6 a.m., 5 a.m., just to wake them up and develop chemistry with them and just to go out to the practice field and throw around footballs. His work ethic is notoriously known. And seeing him just handle questions and talk with such poise and confidence, he just has that leadership aura down pat as a quarterback, as well as you. That's the way you want a quarterback to be. And Cook, you know, he has the opportunity now going into a senior year to be the most decorated quarterback in Michigan State football history. And it helps. You talked about the defensive line. That offensive line is also pretty, pretty good. All-Americans, you know, like Jack Conklin, Jack Allen, who will also be playing with his brother, Brian Allen, you know, Donovan Clark, Cody Keeler, you know, and this will return a unit that allowed 0.85 sacks per game. That was good for fourth best in college football. Cook has all the time in the world because of that outstanding offensive line And that is going to do nothing but help Cook when it comes to his Heisman resume at the end of the day. I mean, it helps to play, behind a great offensive line that gives Cook enough time to make those eye-popping, decisions that D'Antonio loves.
And now to make an extremely corny transition to my number one. Players are hungry. You talk about Cook, these players are hungry. So that was my number one takeaway. I said before, I don't think this is a bust season if they don't win a championship. But like you said, forget the coach speak. Some of these players were saying, oh yeah, there's been some discussion about championships in the locker room. That's big. That does say that this team is ready to go, ready to rear with the big boys. So I can't wait to see how this season goes. And like I said, I'm not sure if it's a championship or bust season. I personally would be more than content if MSU made the playoff. But it's really encouraging to see these players be like, this is our time right now, because this is the first time in the past few years I can remember MSU discussing a championship.
And yeah, and that's my numero uno in this whole thing. Reach higher, their motto, kind of harping on their motto, reach higher. Because, again, it really surprised me when talking with other players how vocal they were in reaching that next mountaintop, and that being, playing in a college football playoff, competing for a national championship. This is what this program is striving for now. And boy, it would be something if they certainly did that. And, if you look at the visual report of my report at Media Day on WKRI.org, I kind of wrapped it up by talking about the Michigan State schedule that they have, which is going to be a tough one, Isaac, point blank period. I mean, especially early on. Again, they go on the road and start the year at Western Michigan in Kazoo, a night game, 7 p.m. That atmosphere is going to be completely just through the roof. That could be a trap game. Who knows? You got to bring it there. Then they come home and begin a four-game homestand, starting with always powerhouse in college football, Oregon. That's also going to be an 8 p.m. night game. So it's going. And then they go and play Air Force, a team that you certainly can't look over. So those first three games alone are going to be games in which are going to have like a mid to late season feel, and they got to come out the gates, and it's going to be a good measuring stick to see where this team is early on, and to iron out those early season wrinkles that could propel them later on in the year to just go on a steamroll. Who knows? But hey, it's going to be a fun season, and again, looking at what Mark D'Antonio has built here, you better believe they are going to compete in every single one of those games, without a doubt.
Al, and I know you think Western Michigan could possibly be a trap game because the kids from the K are going to be crazy that night, but I think Air Force is the more possible trap game.
I think both of those, yeah.
Air Force, we've seen teams like that give Ohio State problems because the wishbone, it's something you don't encounter in practice every day. In fact, you only encounter it when you're about to play one of those teams. So if you're not prepared, it's very tricky, especially if you've got a tough game on the other end.
Folks, what do you think about the Michigan State football program as they are now just less than a month away from the start of their new season? You can go to Facebook.com/currentsports. Leave a comment there. I will read it live during tomorrow's show. You can also even tweet me at Al Martin WKR, or even shoot me an email at almartin@wkr.org. So not two ads, just almartin@wkr.org. That's my email. Shoot me an email. I even read that on the air as well. Well, folks, we unfortunately are out of time. Much thanks to all of you out there for tuning in to this edition of Current Sports with me, Al Martin, right here on WKAR AM 870 East Lansing. As always, take care. Have one fantastic afternoon. And be easy, people.